documents. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. Operation Rescue National, etc., versus Planned Parenthood of Houston and Southwest Texas Incorporated and others from Harris County. James Hatley versus Texas A&M University from Galveston County. James R. Gamble and others versus Jack Williams Chevrolet Incorporated and American Isuzu Motor Incorporated from Parker County. And Babbitt Memorial Hospital System versus Reyes Sampson from Bexar County. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and conclude these arguments before our lunch break. These arguments are being recorded by our clerk, and if you desire to purchase a tape of an argument, you may make application with our clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Operation Rescue versus Planned Parenthood.
May it please the court. My name is Benjamin W. Bull, and I'm with Dick Schmoody. I'm present today representing the petitioners below. This case has been before this court once before in Ex Parte Tucci. As the court may be aware, the circumstances giving rise to this case occurred during the 1992 Republican Convention in Houston, in which the defendants and others attempted to influence the Republican platform on the abortion issue by engaging in demonstration protests both around the convention site and also outside of abortion facilities around the Houston area. In Tucci, this court struck down the first total speech ban adopted by the court in its temporary restraining order. The present no-speech zone, which is before the court, entered by the court 2.5 years after the Republican Convention, is unconstitutional for all of the same reasons set forth in Tucci that resulted in invalidation of the first no-speech injunction. There are 5 discrete and separate reasons under Tucci why this no-speech zone cannot pass muster. First, there was no proof, as required by Tucci, that a total ban on speech is the least restrictive means of preventing irreparable and imminent injury. In fact, during the equity hearing below, the plaintiff's own expert witness, the psychologist Dr. Taggart, testified that banning all speech on public sidewalks outside of these abortion facilities was not necessary to ensure access, prevent harassment, and prevent intimidation. That's the first reason. The second reason under Tucci it's unconstitutional under the Texas free speech provision is that no proof was adduced below, as required by Tucci, that the specific dimensions of the no-speech zones are the least restrictive means of preventing irreparable and imminent injury. In fact, there was no evidence below as to how the specific dimensions of these no-speech zones were developed. We're left to guess, and the only thing we can assume is that the court simply adopted... Yes, sir.
Could we infer that since they're all less than what Manson said was all right, that that's a reason why those particular zones were picked?
The Madsen zone, like the Schenck zone, are fact-specific. The Supreme Court was clear in both these cases, as this was in Tucci, that a no-speech buffer can be supported by a factual record, so long as there's evidence in the record, as discussed in Tucci, the specific buffer is the least restrictive means to protect access. My point is that there was no evidence supporting that particular issue. We don't know anything about how these particular dimensions were developed. Basically, they were left to guess whether or not a less restrictive, a smaller buffer zone might accomplish the governmental interest here.
How did these particular dimensions then end up as part of the injunctive order?
At the equity hearing after the jury trial, the attorneys for the abortion facilities submitted a proposed order, and they were adopted by the court.
Was that the first the court heard of those dimensions, or the first that the petitioners heard of those dimensions?
Yes, ma'am. The third reason this is unconstitutional under Tucci is that there was no evidence below proving that an injunction against obstruction, interference, trespassing, and touching wouldn't be adequate to guarantee and assure access. In other words, again, it's related to the first two points, there was no evidence that the specific injunction, which is not challenged in our appeal, which enjoins obstruction, trespassing, touching, and similar activity, would not be adequate to assure unobstructed access to these facilities. None. The fourth point, and the reason it's unconstitutional, is that there were no specific findings of fact supported by the evidence in the trial court injunctive order that a total ban on speech was the least restrictive means to ensure access and prevent obstruction. Now, why are findings of fact important? Findings of fact are necessary so that an appellate court can test the findings of fact against the record to determine if indeed the record will support this kind of restriction on free speech. Without specific findings of fact, discussing the evidence, demonstrating that a total speech ban is the least restrictive means to ensure access, we're left to guess on appeal. Now, there was a heading in the order entitled Findings of Fact, but if you read them, you'll see that they were conclusory, and there were no facts set forth under the heading Findings of Fact that could be tested against the record so that this court on appeal could determine whether or not the total speech ban was the least restrictive means. And I submit to you, in relation to this reason number four, that this court and the Texas Courts of Appeal have held that only the trial court can enter findings of fact. An appellate court can undo findings of fact, but findings of fact are the exclusive province of the trial court. And in this case, this court set out a roadmap for the trial court in Tucci that the court did not adequately follow.
Mr. Bowl, assuming that buffer zones are permitted, then what evidence, in accepting that the U.S. Supreme Court has held certain distances are permitted, this is less than that, what evidence would you expect the trial court to have to determine what these buffer zones ought to be? What's less restrictive than, say, 31 feet or 15 feet or 13 feet?
There has to be something in the record. Some kind of proof in the record showing that the ban on obstruction, that a ban on trespassing and intimidation and touching was inadequate as a threshold matter. Second, there has to be some testimony. As I read Tucci, and I'm just parroting back to this court what was said in Tucci, there has to be some evidence in the record showing that the dimensions picked by the court were in fact the least restrictive dimensions, and it could come by way of expert testimony of an expert on proxemics, which was lacking here. Police officers could testify that they need this kind of buffer in order to guarantee unimpeded access. There was none of that here. In fact, their own witness testified that banning all speech on any of the sidewalks was not necessary. Here we're left to guess why wasn't it adequate just to ban speech, if you're going to ban it at all, outside of the entrances and exits of these facilities? At the Planned Parenthood facility, this buffer banned speech virtually the entire half block going 15 feet out into the middle of the road. It even bans the defendant's attorney's door from driving through.
The facts were decided by the Court of Appeals are not facts that are in the record then?
I would say not. I would say the Court of Appeals, with all due respect to them, essentially adopted the argument, the factual allegations of the... my opponents.
But none of, as an example, it cites one clinic and described its buffer was 31 feet, but that was because there was not a private drive or the in order to have access and egress from this facility, it needed a 31. All of that was simply, where'd that come from?
The court, assuming that's true, assuming the Court of Appeals was correct, that came from their brief. But assuming that the Court of Appeals is correct, it was not the province of the Court of Appeals to develop that.
My question is, that's what the CA says. Now, they might have gotten it from the brief. Your point is, there's no evidence was testified to. No maps were introduced at the time of trial.
Maps were introduced by Planned Parenthood, but there was no evidence supporting this particular line as opposed to a narrower buffer zone, is what I'm saying. No evidence at all.
Well, if the... So your point is that it is not sufficient for a plant to come in and say, here's the facility, here's what we think is necessary, and the court measure that against a constitutional standard of least restrictive. You really, it's your position that there must be a factual development of least restrictive.
I think so.
So the constitutional standard of least restrictive is really a fact issue for the jury to determine.
I think it's an equity issue. But of course, we asked the court, fact issue for the jury, there has to be, whether it's a fact issue for the jury or a fact issue for the court on the equity issue, there has to be some evidence before the fact finder supporting the specific line that's recommended by the abortion facility.
If it's a judge decision under the equity issue, well, whether it's a fact issue for the jury or a decision for the judge, under the constitutional standard of least restrictive,
yes, sir.
Can't the court simply look at what the evidence is about, here's the buffer zone that we think is necessary, plant come forth? Can't the trial court make a determination from the situs, from what the court sees, that that meets the constitutional standard of least restrictive without there being a witness on the witness stand saying, in their opinion, that's least restrictive?
Whether it's opinion testimony or fact testimony, there has, as I read Tucci, and based upon the higher standard under the Texas Constitution for free speech protection, there has to be, they have to fill the gap. There has to be some specific testimony or evidence adduced at trial that this is supporting the court's conclusion that the no-speech buffer dimensions are the least restrictive means to ensure access. Some evidence addressing that issue, as I read Tucci.
Mr. Bull, are you making the same arguments with the injunction on the residences?
With respect to residences, Your Honor, I think that certainly the same standard applies. You know, there was no evidence adduced in the court, and there were no findings of fact supported by the evidence that banning all speech 13 feet out into a public street is the least restrictive means. Now, we know under Frisbee versus Schultz and under several courts decided in Texas that a ban on speech in front of a private residence, or at least picketing anyway, is permissible so long as there's an adequate record here. The problem with this case is that the ban extending 13 feet out in the middle of the street bans generalized marching or picketing through an entire neighborhood. It doesn't specifically target focused picketing occurring directly in front of a house. In other words, it essentially requires people to go up to that no speech zone, turn around and march back. But essentially, it's the same standard. I grant you, Judge Gonzalez, that the court is more protective of the privacy rights at a private residence, certainly than it is a commercial business. The fifth reason this injunction is unconstitutional under Article 1, Section 8 of the Texas Constitution, and this fifth reason alone should be grounds for striking down this buffer provision. The trial court did not find in its order imminent harm, nor did it find irreparable injury, both required by Tucci and all of the injunction cases impacting free speech in Texas. If you read the order closely, you'll see that the trial court only found that the defendants were, quote, likely to engage in demonstration protests, and that if they did, that it was likely to cause irreparable injury. Whatever likely means, in an area where we're banning free speech, it does not rise to the level of imminent harm. Irreparable injury.
Regarding the injunction against obstruction, why wouldn't the trial court be concerned that that is so general and a ban that it would be difficult to enforce by contempt, and that it would be better to have a zone so that everybody knew where the lines were?
Yeah. The court could conclude that if it had something to conclude at all. There was no proof below that the injunction against obstruction was not adequate, especially in light of the fact that 99% of the complaint misconduct here occurred in August or September of 1992 at the Republican Convention. As I read Tucci, I've read it a dozen times in preparation for this argument, there must be some evidence for the court to conclude, which the court didn't hear, that this particular ban on speech is the least restrictive means available to ensure access. We're left to guess whether or not a narrower ban or buffer zone might have been adequate. Or, as the court points out, maybe the ban on obstruction might have been adequate. We don't know. A good example would, in terms of factual development, would be to go back and look at the state court decision in the Madsen case in Florida and in the federal district court decision in Schenck, and look at the kind of factual development that was adduced in those opinions to support the buffer zones there. There was no guessing there. All we have here on this record, on this order as it comes up, is a no-speech zone that's sort of floating in air without legs. We don't know how it was developed.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, your colleague Patty will give an argument for
respondents. May it please the court, my name is Colleen Petty and I represent the respondent clinic and physicians in this appeal. In granting the portions of this petition for review, this court has undertaken to decide two very basic questions. First, did the trial court make or can this court presume findings sufficient under the United States and Texas constitutions to justify the narrowly tailored restrictions on petitioner's right of free speech imposed here? And second, was there any evidence to support these findings? Fortunately, both of these questions can easily be decided in favor of the respondent. Now, even though the petitioners allege that there were no findings of least restrictive means and all sorts of other things, not even the petitioners can deny that the trial court made detailed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which include the determination that, quote, narrowly tailored relief will serve several significant governmental interests, which include ensuring clinic access, protecting the plaintiff's physician's privacy rights, and, quote, ensuring that competing constitutional rights of groups with differing viewpoints and interests are balanced equitably.
Counsel, is likely to harm the standard? Likely to cause harm the standard?
Your Honor, the ordinary injunctive standards apply, and where there is a constitutional violation, which the court specifically found here that they threaten the constitutional privacy rights of the physicians and the clinic, imminent harm is presumed, or irreparable harm is presumed.
I understand the argument that you're making right now. You're talking about the fact findings that were made by the trial court. My question is, are we obligated to abide by those fact findings if they are not supported by evidence adduced to trial?
If they are not supported by evidence, which we obviously do contend that they're supported by more than a lot of evidence, the court need not be bound by them. They can make their own determination. But the standard is extremely high. This court has no jurisdiction to weigh the evidence, as I believe the petitioners really would have this court do. Instead, it has a very narrow ability to review null evidence points. And I think, as we've suggested in our brief, the court really cannot do that here, first, because the jury found against the defendants, and second, because both the trial court and the appellate court held that evidence supports the judgment. So in this case, any claim of evidentiary sufficiency, even if it's couched in terms of a no evidence point, presents only a question of fact, and this court really has no jurisdiction to hear it. So
it's very easy looking at this to see an effort by a trial judge to balance everybody's interests, but where do we see that this is the least restrictive means of doing it?
Your Honor, I think that the court answered the question in the only logical way that it could, and that was to approach it by saying, what do we need to do to protect the competing constitutional right, here the right to privacy? And the court indicated that the narrowly tailored relief that it had would ensure clinic access and protect the rights, and this was what was necessary to ensure the protection of those rights. What the petitioners would have trial courts do, and I suggest that this would create a nightmare in the trial court, is start with a universe of restrictions and whittle those down. They would engage in the kind of analysis that we used to refer to as determining how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. If there's 13 feet, why not 12 and a half? If there's 10 feet, why not 9 and a half? The court in Madsen and the court in Schenck said that the appellate court should not engage in that analysis. Let me read you two quotes from Madsen. The need for a complete buffer zone near clinic entrances and driveways may be debatable, but some deference must be given the state court's familiarity with the facts and the background of dispute between the parties. Second, under Schenck, a case in which Mr. Bull participated, the courts explained, although one might quibble about whether 15 feet is too great or too small a distance if the goal is to ensure access, we defer to the trial court's reasonable assessment of the number of feet necessary to keep the entrances clear. So it is not required of this court that every type of restriction, of a trial court, that every type of restriction be eliminated and evidence be presented as to why those aren't enough.
But if a trial court said, on the record, I think 10 feet would probably do it, but just out of an abundance of caution, I think I'll go with 30, which is closer to the Supreme Court cases. Wouldn't that show that the trial court did not adopt the least restrictive means?
Your Honor, if there was evidence to support it, I think that's correct. But, and I'm not really, that's not the case in this case or anywhere else.
Well,
I think
in this case,
that
we don't see the trial court saying to itself, I agree with you, we shouldn't be asking is 9.5 better than 10, but somebody should ask that question.
That's correct. What the court did here, and I'm quite surprised that the petitioners have really suggested that it was provided after the fact, was conduct an evidentiary hearing that explained in detail why the certain distances were chosen, why they were necessary. There was evidence from a second psychological expert that indicated that a total ban was appropriate. Mr. Bull has picked out one particular piece of expert testimony. There was an enormous amount of evidence. And second, and I think most important, the petitioners stipulated to the evidence as to how these were configured, that signs could be seen outside of the buffer zone, and all of the types of evidence that the court in Madsen required. So this court, I believe, the trial court here, attempted to satisfy itself that what it was doing was providing the means necessary to protect the constitutional right, which is simply another way of saying that we can't do anything less than that. And so we must have this restriction, and this restriction alone, and that's where the court struck the constitutional balance. It didn't start from the top and work down. It started from the bottom and worked up.
It's possible that someone needs to determine what the facility is, or the size of the facility, or maybe where the driveway is, or that sort of thing. But is it really a factual inquiry on the least restrictive, or is that not a constitutional inquiry that this court can make, as well as any other court can make?
Your Honor, I believe that it almost has to be a constitutional inquiry.
If this court determines that 10 feet was least restrictive based on the record that's before the court in terms of the size of the facility or what the events were, is this court bound by the trial court's conclusion that 15 feet was the least restrictive?
Your Honor, under Madsen and under Schenck, the court really shouldn't engage in that analysis because it wasn't there, it didn't hear the evidence of the case.
But should the court simply say, we're not going to parcel finally over 1.5 feet or 2.5 feet? The question is least restrictive, and is this within the bounds of least restrictive? Isn't that what Madsen is really saying? If we look at those maps...
The Madsen test is not least restrictive means. Burdens no more speech than necessary to protect a significant governmental interest. Now, the Court of Appeals has suggested that that's the same standard, but I think that it really is one that is based on the trial court's determination of the evidentiary sufficiency. It's look at all the evidence in this case, not just the evidence at a remedy hearing.
But it would not, the trial court's decision of least restrictive would not be dependent on some expert or some party or some witness testifying to trial court that this is least restrictive. It wouldn't be bound to rely on that kind of testimony, would it?
Your Honor, it is required, the trial court is required to strike a constitutional balance. What this court did, it didn't use the magic word, which is, I think, all the petitioners required here. It simply said that the specific restrictions that it had were necessary to ensure clinic access, which is a way of saying that we must have all of these things in order to protect the constitutional right. I suggest that places the court squarely at the same level of constitutional protection that it would get if it engaged in the unbelievably complex constitutional analysis and proxemics analysis that the petitioners would urge. Again, it's starting at the bottom and working its way up, and if there is evidence to support that, then I believe that the court has to that this court, given its jurisdictional restrictions, has to abide by that. It can make a separate constitutional determination, but its ability to work with the facts in that case, I think, is limited both by Madsen and by the jurisdictional.
What about the fact that the injunctions, in some instances, extend 15 feet into the public street?
Your Honor, there was evidence in this case that the petitioners had blocked cars coming to and from residences and to and from clinics. And as a result, there was evidence that there was a need to have some car vehicle access to the clinics and to the residences. There was also testimony that basically 15 feet was one lane of traffic. And that's how those were arrived at. And that, I believe, was stipulated to by the petitioners here.
Do I take it by your comment that you disagreed with the Court of Appeals that Madsen, the Madsen balancing test and the least restrictive means test that was pronounced in the Tucci plurality opinion are not the same? Or do you think that they are the functional equivalents?
I think the Court of Appeals has said that they're the functional equivalent. I would argue, however, that the test set forth in Tucci doesn't apply here or ought not apply here. Because it deals with a temporary restraining order where this case involved a jury trial. And the court, I believe, in its opinion, actually made that distinction and noted that there was a limited record, as there always is in a temporary restraining order. What we would argue is that Justice Gonzalez's dissent in Valenzuela versus Aquino and the standard enunciated there ought to apply, because that case involved a jury trial and a determination of liability, not a suggestion that there was probably liability, but an absolute finding of liability. And that test is, in that case, he would have supported a 400-foot ban on protest because it, quote, represents as narrowly tailored a remedy as possible in balancing the right to privacy and the right to free speech, which is precisely the language that the court used here. We believe that that's a more appropriate test in Texas.
Would you refresh my memory? Was the two-day hearing on the equity part a jury trial or to the court?
No, Your Honor. There was a six-week jury trial in this case, and then there was a separate 2 days remedies hearing that included evidence that the jury really didn't need to hear because it wasn't going to participate
but
in the injunction.
But was that hearing directed to the type of the injunction and the extent of the buffer zone?
That's correct. That's
so
what it was directed.
We don't have jury findings, right?
No, we do not. We do not have jury findings.
We have what
as to
the court said. Fact and
that's correct. That's correct. Now, I would like
what
to...
What is the response to the argument that an injunction against obstruction generally would have been sufficient and would have been less restrictive?
Well, first is that the Madsen and the Schenck cases permit a total ban on speech under the circumstances that are strikingly similar to the fact situation here. In fact, if the court looks at the findings of fact and the evidence in the Madsen and the Tucci cases and puts it side by side with the evidence and the findings of fact in this case, it will find that in this case there is an equal amount or a greater amount of evidence to support all of those findings than there was in either Madsen or Schenck. I would also suggest that the court pay some attention to the findings of fact and the factual determinations that were made in the Madsen case because they're nothing like the ones that Mr. Bull would suggest this court apply. There's no proximation in sight. There's no whittling down saying this might work or this might not work, and we have to make all of these factual inquiries. In fact, the findings of fact and conclusions of law are strikingly similar, and so that's what we would argue ought to govern in this case.
Would it make any difference if this were a union dispute?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the union statutes. I think that the court has fashioned a particular standard in these types of cases. I believe that the standards that apply here ought to apply across the board, but I'm not sure if there's a particular
environmental
protection.
Environmental cases, war cases, pollution, whatever.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would also suggest that if the court wants to put these in perspective, it can contrast the ban on each and every member of this court on every election day, the 50-foot buffer zone that's placed between each candidate for office and a voter, and contrast that with the 13-foot ban around the Planned Parenthood clinic. This is not a huge restriction on speech, I don't think that it's something that burdens more speech than necessary, and I think that each of the restrictions is quite well supported by evidence that is necessary to ensure the right to clinic access. Now, I'd like to turn to the second question, because I think we've talked about Madsen, Frisbee, and Toosie, and that is whether there is actually evidence to support them. As we suggested, this court may not have jurisdiction to consider an evidentiary weighing, as the petitioners would suggest. Yet in considering the evidence, if it chooses to do so.
Excuse me, his comments on his five reasons why this order violates Tucci are all based on the premise of no proof, which basically under Texas law then is a no evidence point, which we do have jurisdiction to discuss.
Your Honor, he suggested that there is no proof of these items. Court of Appeals has found that there was sufficient evidence to support those findings, and the trial court has found those. Under this court's decision in Johnson, which we cited in our brief in Texas Power and Light, the court does not have jurisdiction under those circumstances. Because even though it's couched as a no evidence point, which is exactly what he needs to argue in order to even have a chance of getting before this court, it doesn't matter how it's described. That's what it is. It's an evidentiary deficiency.
If he asserts no evidence, then this court's function is to conduct a traditional no evidence review, which we do have the jurisdiction on each assertion that he makes there's no evidence to see if there's some evidence to support it.
Well, Your Honor, it's our position that the court is not bound by the petitioner's characterization of their own claims. The court needs to look at the substance of the action, which is that the Court of Appeals has already found that there was evidence to support these ideas, and under these conclusions.
But that's why he's here. He doesn't agree with that.
Well, that's obviously right, but I'm urging that the court abide by its own decision and not be bound by his characterization of his claims. Obviously, he's going to make a no-evidence claim. I would suggest that a review of the record suggests that there is more than adequate evidence to support the necessity of the restrictions. We will concede that there is not this whittling down, evidence of this whittling down, why isn't it 9.5 as opposed to 10? Why isn't it a total ban? Why is it a total ban as opposed to a restriction on obstruction? That sort of thing. In all of those instances, I think the court needs to go back to Madsen and needs to go back to the Schenck case and see what the findings were in that case. There was none of this analysis of whether this is least restrictive or not. In each of those cases, the court focused on what it was going to take to protect the competing constitutional rights. And when it found what was absolutely necessary to do that, that's where the restriction stopped. I would suggest to you that there is no difference between the least restrictive means test and what is required to ensure the competing constitutional rights, that the constitutional balance is struck at exactly the same point, and there is no need for the kind of evidence and the kind of, I think, circular analysis that Mr. Bull and the petitioners would suggest the trial courts undergo. I think Justice Heck's point is a good one with regard to other areas of the law, unions, et cetera. I think that there is a danger in cases involving or touching upon the abortion issue of creating a new standard and a new area of the law that just deals with that issue. I urge the court not to do that and to use its ordinary rules about what its jurisdiction is and what kind of evidence is required for injunctions to look at the cases in Madsen and in Schenck and to utilize those standards. Now, I think what we have left is that this court has before it, despite the characterization that the petitioners would put on it, a mountain of photographs, of maps, which are exactly the kind of evidence that was required by the court in Toosie and found lacking. It has videotapes, depositions. It has 29 volumes with live testimony introduced at a six-week trial. It has 500 jury findings, and those made by the court, and those that can be presumed here. And it combines that all with a two-day remedies hearing that included evidence, much of which was stipulated to by the petitioners. When it finds that, when it reviews all of that evidence, which is a lot more, significant amount more than was the case in Toosie, because we're not back here on Toosie. This is a different day. This is their jury trial, not a TRO. It will find that there is not just some evidence, and the standard is extremely high. Can overturn only if there's a complete absence of evidence. the no evidence point that was discussed earlier, and it can only consider evidence and reasonable inferences that tend to support the court's judgment. When it utilizes the proper standards, utilizes its own decision, it will find that there is not just some, but there is overwhelming evidence to support the notion that the narrowly tailored restrictions here are necessary to preserve competing constitutional rights, and as a result are the least restrictive means to preserve clinic access and burden no more speech than necessary to protect a significant governmental interest. On that basis, this court ought to affirm the trial court and the Court of Appeals.
Briefly, with respect to the stipulation, with all due respect to my colleague, Ms. Petty, she's dead wrong on the stipulation. The court will look at the transcript of the equity hearing. We did not make the stipulation that Ms. Petty represented to the court. We only stipulated that these were the maps prepared by Planned Parenthood that they were submitting to the court as the maps of the injunction. That was it. Anything else is simply incorrect, and as a quick review of the equity transcript will demonstrate that. The reason Ms. Petty is asking this court to disregard the Tucci decision is because she knows, and anybody who reads the court's opinion below, the order below, and compares it to the requirements of the Tucci decision, granted a plurality, it must be overturned and invalidated and sent back to the trial court to do what the Tucci court told it to do. There was simply no proof, no findings of fact based upon the evidence that could be tested on appeal that the no-speech zones and the dimension of those zones were the least restrictive means necessary to ensure access.
Was there any evidence that protesters had in the past purposefully blocked or hindered entry into the clinics or into the driveways?
Depends how you characterize it.
What was the evidence on blocking access to clinics?
There was no evidence on that I'm aware of.
In the trial? In the six-week trial?
There may have been some, Your Honor. I came in at the equity side of it. I reviewed the appeal. Yes. This was during the Republican convention in August of 1992. There were many people on the sidewalks outside of the clinics that made it difficult and effectively obstructed these abortion facilities at that time.
But wasn't the trial court entitled to take that into account?
Oh, of course. Yes, ma'am. And we believe that an injunction against further obstruction, interference, intimidation, or touching, things of that matter, would accomplish, would satisfy the governmental interest here. My problem is not with that part of the injunction. My problem is banning all speech, which goes well beyond physical obstruction. A total ban, in addition, it's constitutionally overbroad because it targets and eliminates more than the exact source of the evil the government needs to address here, which is physical access.
How are these buffer zones different from the Madison buffer zones?
There is evidence. Well, the standard is different to start with.
Why is the standard different?
Why? Because Texas's history with respect to the protection of free speech.
Under the U.S. Constitution, what's the difference here between this case and Madison buffer zones?
Are you conceding that if this case were tried solely under the United States Constitution, that the trial court's order should be upheld?
No, I think it doesn't even satisfy the Madison decision or Schenck. Under either the Texas standard or the federal standard, there has to be some evidence that this is the least restrictive means necessary or the least burdensome means necessary.
My specific question, how are these buffer zones different from the ones that the U.S. Supreme Court upheld in Madison?
There was evidence in those cases that less restrictive means had proven inadequate, especially in Madison. We talked about that. In other words, there were earlier attempts to guarantee and assure access to prevent intimidation that had failed. What this court did was start with a total ban and never work backwards. What the state court in Madison did, and also in Schenck, was to start smaller. And when that didn't work, it enacted a total buffer on speech. I grant you, a total ban on speech will ensure access. But we're left to guess whether or not an injunction against the obstruction and intimidation would have accomplished that purpose.
But there had been evidence of obstruction and intimidation. That had happened, had it not?
Yes. And we haven't challenged that part of the injunction.
Besides obstruction, wasn't there evidence of vandalism parts of the building?
Yes. And damages. They were awarded over $1 million in damages, which alone would chill any similar kind of misconduct. Well, after this,
well, did I understand you correctly in response to Justice Owen's questions? Are you saying that the least restrictive means test is the equivalent of the balancing test used by the United States Supreme Court?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
You're saying that they're different tests.
I'm saying that the Texas Constitution requires a higher standard for banning speech. Well, this court told me that in the Tucci case.
And where's to take the four votes in Tucci and just kind of boost it up to five?
Well, as lawyers practicing in this field, Tucci is the case that's closest to this.
But there is no majority of it. Unfortunately, despite my fine dissent.
Yeah. Even under the test suggested by Judge Gonzalez, I do not believe this would pass muster. There was simply no evidence.
But isn't that the test we have to look to get to five votes?
Well, he was a concurring opinion in Tucci. The lead opinion was what we follow. And under that opinion, Ms. Petty knows, and I know, that it simply doesn't match up with what the court said in Tucci.
You're upset about the, you still have to answer the Jenkins question, but let me answer this one first. You're upset about the trial court's findings of fact. They weren't specific enough. Did you object to those findings?
Oh, yes. Yes, sir, we did. We did at the hearing, and the transcript will say so. We filed a motion for a new trial in which we said this thing labeled findings of fact were not findings of fact at all. They were totally conclusory. They were not supported by any discussion of the evidence. We had no basis when this case went up, and the court did not tell us what the basis was for drawing these dimensions the way they did, for enacting the kind of buffer zones the way she did. And there was no way an appellate court could test whether or not this total ban on speech was, in fact, the least restrictive means. I mean, just labeling something findings of fact doesn't make it so. If you read them, and they're simply not. At least they don't match up with what the court said in Tucci.
Well, I was trying to understand the difference, what your view is, the difference between the least restrictive means test under the Tucci plurality opinion and Madsen's balancing test. And you're saying that the least restrictive means is a higher standard.
As I read the Tucci plurality granted, because the Texas Constitution provides a high protection, a little bit more is required in the trial court.
Yes.
Whether that's evidence or specific findings of fact demonstrating that this is, in fact, least restrictive means.
And I think I understand what you're talking about, what that evidence needs to look like. Do you agree with Ms. Petty, though, that this evidence, this record does contain evidence that reflects the type of balancing that the Supreme Court required in Madsen?
No, I would disagree.
You think it's devoid of any evidence that would relate to the balancing test as well?
I think it's devoid of any evidence demonstrating that a ban on obstruction and physical misconduct was not adequate to bring order on the sidewalks outside of the abortion
center. Well, but my question to you is in terms of the balancing. She has specifically said to us, I believe, that there is evidence in the record to support the balancing test that the Supreme Court applied in Madsen. Is there evidence of the competing interest in the record in this case?
I think the evidence in this case is inadequate.
Is there any evidence?
Well, there's evidence that certain misconduct occurred, primarily in 1992, which leads to another
problem. My specific question is that we're looking at competing interests.
Yes, ma'am.
And Ms. Petty has told us that there is evidence in the record of those competing interests that would allow the trial court to do the balancing necessary under the Madsen test. And my question to you, is there any evidence of these competing interests in the record that allowed the trial court to conduct the balance? Any evidence?
Certainly there was evidence in the record that the court, whether it's characterized as a balancing test or not, I mean, granted, some equitable relief was justifiable. We just don't know, and we submit that there was inadequate evidence and inadequate findings, in fact, based upon the evidence, that a total ban on speech was warranted here, especially under Tucci.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.